back, everyone, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm once again Tony Black, your host for this next piece of coverage on Season 11's fourth episode, The Lost Art of Forehead Sweat. And today, to talk about Darren Morgan, the man behind the magic himself and his Easter eggs, once again is Carl Sweeney. How are you, sir?
Doing well, Tony, except I was just looking for a videotape of my favourite Twilight Zone episode, but I can't find it. I don't know what's going on there.
Don't you mean the Dusky Realm?
That's it. Could be. You even know me, Tony.
Could be the Outer Limits, you know. Well, this is the thing, right? One of the things we're going to do in this episode, as well as talk a little bit about Darren Morgan, and we have over the last two episodes, but yeah. I think if this is his swan song, I think it bears having a little bit of a discussion about the man and his legacy and things like that. But I think it's going to be fun to sort of pick out here and there some of the little things in the episode that stood out as classic Darren Morgan, either in jokes or things that he would do. And the first one, for me, was once again the use of classic Darren Morgan X-Files actors.
Right, so there's a couple in that teaser, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. We've got a... Firstly, the best one that he's ever used, Alex Dearkin, who plays Buddy the... like the 50s kind of cafe owner slash the devil, Dracula, whatever. Yeah. What do you want to call him? And that guy, I mean, he cropped up in Weremonster, didn't he, as the weird sort of sort of motel owner, didn't he?
Yeah, last seen drinking rubbing alcohol, I think, in the Weremonster episode. But
he's brilliant, that guy.
Yeah, he was the hypnotist as well, wasn't he, in Jose Chung. I think he's been in all of the Morgan episodes on the X-Files, isn't he?
Well, he was in. Was he in Humbug? I think he was, wasn't he?
He was the curator of that little museum they go to, or Scully goes to.
Yeah.
What's about Chang and Eng?
Yes, that's it. Chang and Eng, and he tells her the story about Chang and Eng. And then, he was the tarot dealer in
that's right,
Clyde Bruckman. Yes. And doesn't he get killed by the murderer in that? I think he might do. Yeah, he wasn't actually in War of the Coprophages.
Bum, bum, bum.
I know. Shocker.
This is the Mandela effect in action.
the Mengele effect.
I can see him in that episode, Tony.
Is it. Yeah. He was Dr. Fingers in Jose Chung's Space. Brilliantly named. And then he was also in a couple of Millenniums. He was in Somehow Satan Got Behind Me, which was one of Darren Morgan's Millennium ones. He was Greb in that, and I can't immediately remember.
I think he must have been one of the four demons in the coffee shop.
Yes, he was. He was one of the four demons in the coffee shop.
But also, Tony, that guy opposite him, you know, the guy who's saying, hey, I'm not crazy, the world's crazy. He was in The X-Files. I think he was in the Musings of a Cigarette Smoking Man episode. He was one of the guys who gave young CSM his mission. But what I most remember him from is Millennium, that Somehow Satan Got Behind Me episode. He's like the television executive or whatever it is. No, he's the censor, isn't he? And he's, you know, he's kind of bombarded with, you know, this is unacceptable. Yeah. Broadcasting standards and practices.
That's it. It's unacceptable.
Yeah. So hats off to Darren Morgan for bringing those guys back, yeah?
Dan Zukovic is the guy who's, I'm not mad, the world's mad, that guy. And he was also in Jose Chung's Doomsday Events and Somehow Satan Got Behind Me as well, so... Mm. Yeah, he's one of, a great little callback. And Alex Dearkin was in I Want to Believe as well. So, he was two great ones. Also, Bill Doe as well.
Chuck Burks.
Chuck Burks, who, the legendary Chuck Burks, who sadly we haven't seen, I think, since, was it Badler, the last one he was in?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Which is a shame, because I think they should have brought Chuck Burks back. Chuck Burks was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was also in War of the Coprophages as Dr. Rick Newton, that guy. I think was he one of the guys who gets... He's on the toilet.
Well, I think he's one of the guys who... Oh, maybe that was him, yeah. I just remember he has the line where he says, after talking to Agent Mulder, I suddenly feel a little constipated. That's what I remember him saying.
That's it. And then doesn't he go to the toilet and that's when he gets killed?
I think that's it, yeah.
By the cockroaches, yeah.
He'd been in the Jersey Devil as another character as well. But he had a good line here, which I thought was I'm kind of paraphrasing it. But he said something about, you know, it's those flashbacks to the pawn shop or whatever it was, and he's talking about the Mengele effect, and he says something about people started to misremember how racist the items were or something. And I don't know. I need to go back and check exactly what he said, but it was a funny line.
I can't quite remember it either off the top of my head. But it was nice to see those guys back. Darren Morgan always does this. He always brings back people that he's worked with on the other comedy episodes. And it helps sort of tie it all into being its own little continuing saga. You know, this continuing sort of pocket universe. I keep using that term, but that's... You know, it helps reinforce that, really, having this repertoire, this rep of actors.
Yeah, this kind of stock company. Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
It's really nice, isn't it? And he's not the only one. Like, when I was talking to Karen Connival, like, last week, and she was saying, Glenn Morgan calls and I'll kind of drop everything and I'll go and work with him. And, yeah, it's just really nice, isn't it, that Morgan, obviously, but also Glenn Morgan and Chris Carter's got his favourites. And these people who just come in and out and... You don't really give much thought, really to Alex Deakin in between seeing him on The X-Files, or at least, I'm sure he's done other stuff, but I haven't necessarily seen it. But it just gives you this kind of warm glow when you see him pop up in something like this, doesn't it?
It really does. And I really, really want to try and get him on this show, actually. Yeah. I'd love to get him on The X-Cast to talk about being in The X-Files. So I think that'd be fascinating. Mm. Really, really would.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it really would.
So, I'll see what I can do, guys. I'll see what I can do. But yeah, so you've got the actors, you've got those elements playing, and then there were obviously references, little hints. There was a sighting of the dream man. What's he called? This man, the one who keeps cropping up in all the episodes with the big monobrow or whatever. There was a sighting of him on the X-Files board as well.
Yeah.
So at this stage, what do you think that's about? Because I don't know if we've talked about that a lot in this, but in these coverage. But what do you think's going on there? Is this just a bit of a throwaway gag that they're, or does it mean something?
Right. I'm going to stick to my guns here, because since people started talking about this, I've said, I don't really think they're going to go down any kind of alternative universe route, really. I just can't see them doing that with the overarching narrative, But it kind of feels like to me, I don't know, it feels like something that, and this could be completely wrong, I'll just say, but it feels like something maybe Glenn Morgan maybe would kind of see the value in doing something like this. Because I think when Morgan and Wong were at the helm of Millennium, for instance, they really did like to seed things that would come up in later episodes, even if it was like, little character beats or whatever. So I don't know, the fact that there's this could be something from him, I don't know, that's just kind of what I feel. I've got nothing to like back that up. I'd be amazed if they went down the parallel universe route, but hey, who knows? I mean, obviously this episode, Mulder was insistent, wasn't he, at parallel universes could have been at work.
Yeah, and everyone's like, Scully's like, it's obviously just not, you're not remembering it, it's obvious. And he's like, no, it could be a parallel universe. But I think though, that unless this whole thing is being set up for Chris Carter to pull a flanker, to me, this is them aware that people are going to start going, oh, parallel universe, and they're going, nah. This episode's that whole thing of them just taking the mick out of the very idea. I can't quite see how Mulder could get away now with saying to Scully, I think we're in a parallel universe after this episode. I think it would be ridiculous in the real serious episodes if it turns out to be that. I just think that they've lampooned that on purpose because they know that it's not going down that road. To be honest, which I've never thought it was going down that road, and I stick to that. I do think the man has some significance somewhere. Mm. I think this is going to play into a monster episode.
Like, the one element of the parallel universe discussion that I've given a bit more credence to, and I think maybe this is what they could do, is something where William is exerting some kind of power, or he's kind of got the ability to shape things to his will or something, And maybe he's kind of leaving these clues or something and they haven't quite picked up on them yet. And maybe that's going to pay off. Ultimately, I still don't think that's what's going to happen. But I think if they were going to do something, that would be quite a nice way of tying up this stuff with the This Man poster. But I just can't see it. I don't know. I just can't see it.
No, me neither. And I think without spoiling them, I think that's a bit too close to Joe Harris's season 11 comic for me. Go and investigate that, guys, if you want to know more. I won't spoil it, but I don't think that's going to happen myself, but there you go, it's possible, who knows at this stage. But yeah, so you've got a couple of other things. I spotted Sputnik's Sanitarium on Reggie's transportation vehicle, which is obviously a nod to Frank Sputnik's, the much missed Frank Sputnik's, who's not been involved in the revival, sadly. Did you spot any more, Carl? Because I'm because it's so close to the we're recording this, like we've just watched it. Basically, I think there's a lot more people will be picking up than we've had chance to. Really,
well, of course, there's the X on the window, isn't there? Which has been the first time in a long time that we've seen that.
Yeah, it has actually. It's been years, many seasons.
That went by pretty quickly to me. I kind of it took me a second to work out what was going on there, because when it cut back to the window, I couldn't see what had changed, you know. So was it that Reggie had turned up and put X on the outside of the window? Is that what had happened?
I wasn't entirely sure. I thought that a light had maybe been shone on it.
Yeah.
But which could be maybe a sort of inverse of the fact that Mulder used to shine his lamplight on the X to summon his informant. Maybe it was that Reggie shined a light on the X from the outside to get Mulder to notice. I don't know. I'd have to watch it again. But I did like the fact, though, that Reggie, he's set up in the same vein as an informant, as an ex or a deep throat. You know, that was quite fun, the way they... Because at first you might think Mulder's going to meet a new informant, you know, if you didn't know better in this episode. But then it turns out it's this crazy guy with this theory. So, yeah, that was a nice one.
Yeah, I know we've already talked about those car park scenes. And the only thing I'd say there is it comes quite quick on the heels of the confrontation with Skinner in this, which I thought was a brilliant scene. But, I mean, it's absolutely in keeping, isn't it, with, you know, what's been established in the series, that Mulder would have these kind of clandestine meetings. So, yeah, I don't have a problem from it at all in that respect.
Yeah, I think it's okay.
Well, obviously, we talked a bit about the clips, didn't we? And I did see a good story from Morgan about a clip he wanted to include but couldn't. I don't know if you've heard this.
No, I don't think I have, no.
Right, so he wanted to get in the end scene from Postmodern Prometheus with Mulder and Scully dancing and have Reggie kind of dancing behind them in the background. But he said that, you know, when they're going through all these clips, a lot of the times the problem is, like, you know, the scenes are filmed in like tight close-ups or whatever. And it's not always as easy as you might think to incorporate a third actor or another actor into these scenes, you know. So I think, considering that it must have been quite an arduous process of like working exactly where they could put Brian Husky in, I thought they did a good job with those clips.
Yeah, no, I did as well. I think, and I think the one thing that really cracked me up was when they included Small Potatoes, and you see Eddie Van Blunt shapeshift back into Darryl Morgan, and then Reggie shoots him. To me, there was a few things about that. I think that Darryl Morgan is mocking the fact that he was in it, and he's like, oh, look at me. Like, what was I doing? And also, given the current climate, it's that whole little bit of a... Because let's face it, Eddie Van Blunt was a skeevy...
Yeah.
So I think it's that whole thing of, you know, let's kill the guy. You know, show him no mercy.
Yeah, that's fascinating, because I've heard Morgan interviewed in the past, and I'm sure I've heard him once be asked, like, directly, did he like Small Potatoes? And he kind of avoided the avoided answering the question, you know. So I got a feeling he's kind of ambivalent about that one. But I've also seen him say that the reason for including the clip kind of had a more kind of practical function, in the sense that because he appears as an actor in the episode, he gets some kind of residual check, you know, from having his image included. So it's a possibly for financial means as well.
He's making himself a few quid. Very nice. Very good. Very good. But yeah, it was. I think they did a reasonably good job with them, and I think it was just a really fun, cheeky idea that you know, you could only get away with in a Darryl Morgan episode.
Well, what do you think though? Because I mean, I very quickly looked at the online reaction, and you know, I'm seeing people say it's too meta or whatever. I mean, where do you stand on that? Because I think where I would come from is from the sense that writing like such a metatextual episode is not an easy thing in and of itself. I mean, to do it well is tricky, you know. So I don't hold it against Morgan that he's gone down that avenue, you know.
No, and I think really he's done this. He's always done this. You know, all of his episodes have a level of meta about them. They are taking a step back from the reality and looking at the X-Files through this lens of being able to poke fun at it by knowing the inside jokes, by, you know, being aware of it and having an awareness that, you know, TV shows don't normally have. You know, the TV shows about action heroes and, you know, this kind of escapism, it doesn't always have that level of self-awareness, you know. And whenever you get an episode or that does that, you know, all the shows have sort of taken this format, you know, things like Supernatural, you know, have done the odd Darren Morgan-esque episode, like things like The French Mistake, if anyone knows Supernatural, where I think it's that one where they basically they end up in the writers' room, or they meet their own writers of the show, you know, and things like that. So there's a lot of shows have taken a cue from this, and I think they like to do it because it allows them to sort of remind you that, you know, don't take this too seriously, in a way. And I think that's kind of what meta is all about, and what Darren Morgan's all about from his approach is, at the end of the day, right, it's very silly, it's very daft, and I think they all enjoy taking that sort of step back and going, yeah, this is daft, really, but it's all part, I think it's very clever, and I think it's, like you said, it's very, very hard to write this level of complexity. You know, he makes it look easy, whether you like the episodes or not. He makes this kind of writing look easy in the way that, you know, the Zuckers did with the Naked Gun films and things like that, where the level of gags and the level of, you know, detail is astonishing, you know, and his episodes are always like that. So I don't have a problem with it. I think it's his trademark, and, you know, I mentioned earlier talking about his legacy. I think he's all of the writers, a lot of the writers in the X-Files, even the ones who are on it now and the ones who were on it, there's been an argument that they all have their own version of canon, in a way. They all see the X-Files from their own prison. This is something that Darren Mooney even, as our friend Darren Mooney, who's on the podcast, has written about, you know, in his blogs and in his book, that each writer has their own visual idea of what the show is. And while all of them stand out in their own various ways, I think Darren Morgan's stands out so much more than anybody else's, because it's so different and so unique. And it's just unlike almost anything else you get on TV. And it always has been. And I think that's why it's going to be remembered, you know, and that's why his episodes always are remembered, you know, by fans of the show. You know, you could try naming, you know, 5 David Amman episodes. No disrespect to him, but, you know, there's a big difference.
There is, and I think obviously part of it is that Morgan hasn't been, you know, particularly prolific, has he? So the kind of the pleasure of seeing a new episode hasn't faded really at all, I would say. Personally, I kind of am more drawn to like the writers who kind of churn stuff out, you know. So whereas, like, it's not that I'm saying, like, Chris Carter is a better writer than Darren Morgan necessarily. But I find Carter a more interesting figure in a sense because he's so prolific. And, you know, in addition to all the writing he's done, he's done a lot of rewriting that we're not always necessarily aware of. And I sort of feel this way with other kind of, you know, with novelists and musicians and so on. I always find the people who kind of turn up year in, year out, I find their body of work's a bit more kind of satisfying, you know, to kind of appraise. But that's not to detract from Morgan at all, because I think, like, his best work is, like, right up there with, like, the best stuff that the X-Files has ever produced. I think where I'd slightly take issue is sometimes you read... I don't really have anyone in particular I'm thinking about here, but sometimes you read, like, the general TV critics who, possibly because it's so metatextual what Darren Morgan does... And they kind of sometimes seem to hint at, or sometimes even just come out and say it, that, you know, his version of the X-Files is the most worthwhile one, or, you know, you can just watch his episodes and kind of dispense with the rest of the series. And not everybody goes that far, but I've definitely seen that kind of strand of thought, you know. And I would disagree strongly with that, although his canon, if you want to put it that way, it's been hugely influential, isn't it? I mean, Humbug, his first two, Humbug and Clyde Bruckman, so influential because they led to so much of his stuff, didn't they? And he's going to have a very, you know, when the ultimate, you know, the full story of the X-Files is finally written, whenever the series is finally over, you know, the Encyclopedia of the X-Files is going to have a very chunky section on Darren Morgan, isn't he? Because even though he comparatively hasn't contributed that much to the series, as opposed to some of the others, he's kind of left a big, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, you know, shaped footprint in his wake, isn't he?
Yeah, Mulder would have trouble squatching him. It's true. No, he really has. He's left a real mark. And I think, you know, in the final reckoning, when you when people put together their top 10 X-Files of all time, you're going to have at least one or two Darren Morgan episodes in there, you know, and on that rate, on that average, on that ratio, it's pretty remarkable, really. Not many other writers would do that when they've only written like 5 or 6 episodes out of 200, you know, plus. And that's, yeah, you know, that's a testament, really. So I think what he's done is great. I think this is a great send-off for him, for his interpretation of the X-Files, full of his same kind of jokes, full of his Easter eggs, very timely, topical, you know, about certain things, even if maybe the Trump alien is a little bit of a step too far with his invisible wall in space. Yeah. But I'd rather him be doing that than write something that's funny but doesn't say anything. And the difference with this and Weir Monster was lovely, but it was saying something different. It was much more sort of an inverse take on the Monster of the Week idea, you know, in that we were the monsters. And that, you know, poor Guy Mann was just like in the wrong place at the right time, this ancient, you know, creature. It was a different take on this. This is Morgan, you know, taking on the mythology, essentially, taking on what the truth in the X-Files means, you know. And ultimately, his belief is that the truth doesn't matter. You know, the truth is out there. Because it doesn't mean anything anymore, really. And, you know, I think that's kind of his philosophy, and that maybe one of the things he's saying is that we all just need to chill out about this. We all just need to stop worrying about it, you know, and start facing the fact that everything's just so complicated and crazy, and, you know, it's impossible. We're never going to quite solve it all. We're never going to quite understand it all. So just go with it. And I kind of think that's the message that's kind of what I take from it. I think that's what he's leaving behind.
Yeah, I think what I really like about these last two Darren Morgan episodes is that you've got one that's very inward-looking, it feels like to me, and one that's much more outward-looking, so they make a nice contrast. So, like I said, I really enjoyed the kind of midlife crisis aspect of the Weremonster, and, you know, that kind of existential discussion Mulder and Guy Mann have in the cemetery. But it's nice here to see him kind of focus that gaze outwards, I think. And obviously it seems like opinions divided on how successful he's been. It seems like opinions divided on how appropriate that approach was in the first place. But I'm glad. I mean, this is my initial kind of snapshot reaction. I'm glad that, you know, Darren Morgan sat down, you know, to write an X-Files episode in, well, what would have been 2017. His, you know, the thought going through his head is, how do I write an X-Files episode in the age of Trump? And I like the fact he's kind of confronted that head on. I like the fact that he hasn't kind of sidelined that and tried to do something that wasn't true to, you know, his original aim. So, very curious to see where opinion falls on this one. I suspect that some of the people who didn't like this one may come around somewhat on it. I'm not quite sure. But by the same token, it may be that some of the people who've come straight out and said, like, instant classic or whatever, may feel in the final reckoning that, okay, it's not quite as strong as Jose Chung, Clyde Bruckman. You know? So, yeah, well, let's wait and see, I suppose.
Yeah, and, we'll, you know, we'll get a taster of that in a couple of days when you do the listener mailbag with your guest on that episode. And, yeah, you'll get some interesting feedback, I think. I think it'll be a very interesting discussion to see what people have said there. So, yeah, that'll be really good. That's coming in a couple of days after our interview with Brian Husky himself, Reggie something himself. And he was a really nice guy to speak to. And, yeah, that's coming very soon, guys, that interview. If you're one of our patrons, then you've already heard it, you lucky people. So that's our coverage of The Lost Art of Forehead Sweat. Until the mailbag, all done and dusted. So it's been nice to do this with you, Carl. This is our only one where we're doing season 11 together, I think, unless there's a sudden change in the wind. And so yeah, but you'll be back. You'll be doing the mailbags for all the episodes, so you'll be getting some guests on and talking about that. So you're doing a great job with them. So, you know, it's great to have you on board.
Thank you. Yeah, those mailbags have been really fun so far. So yeah, if anyone's listening and hasn't, you know, put pen to paper yet and got in touch with us, or, you know, put finger to keypad, then please do. It'd be great to have as many new opinions as possible to read out in the forthcoming episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. Do that, guys. So yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for hopefully enjoying our coverage, and quite presumptuous of me there. And until next time, remember, as always, trust no one.